2005 session of the House Education Committee will come to order. Welcome committee members and certainly guests. For the record, Representative Tomei is out ill, and we hope that she gets better soon. Now, in order to expedite some schedules, we are going to be hearing from Oregon Community Colleges and the Oregon University System. And in regard to dual enrollments and accelerated high school learning. So, Pam Fraley, if you'd like to come forward with your component, and as I understand it, they will roll through presenting each other and bringing each other forward as we move through the agenda today. Just as a reminder, the House Committee Education Committee Fund, we're funding education first here. We have a little assessment of $1 for those acronyms used without a definition and or cell phone. So you might want to make a check on yourself. I see some movement out there. Thank you very much. with that, Pam, welcome today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Pam Corey-Sprawley. I am the Commissioner for Community Colleges. I am also the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today to talk about accelerated learning, also known as dual enrollment and dual credit courses and programs between community colleges, high schools, and the university system. We are here today to share information, and we've brought some real live people with us who are actually participating in these dual credit and dual enrollment programs, and we hope that you will see that we are effectively serving Oregon high school and community college students through these programs. Chair Flores, the outline for this afternoon is that the three of us, that would be Dr. Connie Green to my left, and to her left is Dr. Salam Noor. We are the policy talkers, and then we'll move right into the highlights and examples of the dual enrollment and dual credit programs that are in operation around the state, giving you some highlights of the array of programs that exist. Connie's going to share with you how high schools and community colleges work together to serve students, and she will also talk about the resources, how money moves from place to place or not. And Salam will share at least a broad level the array of dual enrollment. And we have you should have some handouts in front of you to help you follow along. First, a little bit of history. This is not a new subject in Oregon. We have a long legislative history of supporting students' transitions from high school into college. Actually, the statutory language goes back almost 40 years, encouraging and incenting the collaboration between high schools and community colleges. And there are literally tens of thousands of students and probably hundreds of thousands of credits that have been earned by high school students, helping them get a jump start on their collegiate education. The need to increase access for all students to a rigorous high school curriculum that prepares them to succeed in college is more important than ever. Today's jobs in the fastest growing industry sectors are those that require some college beyond, or some education beyond college. To be competitive and succeed academically, students must take rigorous coursework at all levels, and particularly in high school. This is especially true in Oregon, where nearly 75% of Oregon's high school graduates do go on to some college within their first year of leaving high school. To address the issues that that are surrounding successful student transition to college, this past September, a roundtable was held here in Oregon, actually here in Salem at Chemeketa Community College, and it brought together administrators from state agencies, colleges, high schools, state legislators, and others to look at what were perhaps some of the, to look at successful programs and how were we doing it, and then barriers and what else did we need to do in order to make it more seamless and make that transition easier. And you have as one of your handouts this colored document, and the title is Accelerated High School Learning Opportunities. And this is a summary of a much more detailed report, and I would encourage you in your late night reading. because it does give you a good feel for the conversation that occurred that day, as well as outcomes for the discussion of where the people that participated there wanted to take the conversation next. And the two particular areas from this particular acceleration roundtable were to continue to increase and sustain accelerated learning opportunities for students, and to identify resources and policy considerations, and that's code for barriers to increasing accelerated student learning options. So that you don't believe that this roundtable on accelerated learning happened in a vacuum, it was well attended by individuals who've been working with the Oregon University system and the what has been termed the More Better Faster Committee, moving more students faster through to collegiate programs. And they're well represented in the information here. I'd like to now ask Connie to talk to you about how these programs work and how they're paid for. And with that, I am going to excuse myself. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, my name is Connie Green with the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. When you think about how the money follows the students, first you've got to look at how the programs work. And you're going to hear throughout this afternoon different ways of different programs, and they all work a little bit differently. If you want to go back, though, to the Oregon Revised Statute of where we begin of how we work this program, in the statute it basically says high schools and community colleges can contract and work together to increase participation wherever possible. So we have programs where the high school will contract with the community college. If I can take a Yamhill Carleton, they have contracted with Chemehuevca Community College to offer a Japanese course. It's college-level Japanese. They pay for the instructor. It's just a regular contract. You bring it in. They offer it to a group of students, and that's one way to do it. The students don't pay any tuition, but it's part of the contract between the colleges to offer it. They pay for the instructor through the contract, and it truly is an college instructor at their location. There's other programs that we often call dual credit. Sometimes you might call them dual enrollment, but we usually call them dual credit, and this gets the language issues going here. With our dual credit programs, the high school provides the instructor. The instructor has all the qualifications of a college instructor. In fact, in our Oregon administrative rules, didn't want to happen to say something there without writing the whole thing out. It's going to, the chair something almost slipped out there.
The Oregon, but you want to fund education.
I do, but not with my little, no, seriously. But in the process, in those administrative rules, it basically permits the colleges to, it basically asks the colleges, if you're going to offer something to high school, the high school has to have the same criteria of the instructors as you would have at the college. So that Oregon administrative rule makes sure that the quality of instruction is the same. So then you might have a great high school instructor, but if they don't have the master's degrees with X amount of credits in a certain topic, they cannot teach it. So many of them do go back and pick up extra credits so they can teach that college-level class. With that college-level class, it's taught in the high school with that high school instructor. So the high school counts that as part of their enrollment because it's in their building with their instructor. However, the community college also counts it as a full-time equivalent or an FTE. Made that one too. So in this process and in the Oregon Revised, and Oregon Revised Statutes, there actually is a in 451.525 that actually says that we can do that. And that's part of the reason we do that is so the college, as it helps train that faculty member, as it helps align that curriculum, there is some resource coming back. They don't get any money for this. They may get a transcripting fee of $25 to $30 per student. But that FTE enrollment helps support the actual connecting of the work, because you do have to go out and work with the faculty. You do have to make sure the quality is the same. You do have to do that alignment work. And so that's why we're able to both count it in the high school reimbursement and in the community college reimbursement. So far, so good?
May we interrupt with a question?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
In theory, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, in theory, then, if a student were enrolled in high school and took courses that were all community college transcriptable, they would literally sit in their high school, and it's hypothetical, of course, mm-hmm. take perhaps 4 or 5 credits, a full FTE would be paid to the community college and to the high school?
Correct. Correct. That is the way it is currently set up. And when in 1965 and in 1995, these conversations were revisited, and in looking at the cost of doing the work and the connecting piece, it seemed to be the value to the system to let both count, because most students were not taking all the courses at the community college. Most students were taking one or two courses at their high school, and that connecting of that one or two courses to keep that curriculum aligned, how are you going to keep paying for that and aligning that? And this is a way to do that without it being an extra resource, if I can put it that way.
Follow up, Madam Chairman. What is the payment per FTE, per student, FTE student, at the community college level? What would the state pay for a community college student loan?
Well, if you were to look at a course, it's about $130. Okay, it's not per FTE, but if you look at a course, if a student is taking a course, it's about $130. And I can get you the FTE full-time equivalency as we go through, and I can get you actually a chart that gives you the FTE, but it changes every year, so I need to make sure I give you the most accurate amount of that FTE. It's a little bit...
$130 and a course. How many college credits is a course?
It's usually anywhere... The average is 3 to 4, and I say average is 3 to 4 because most of your courses are usually a 3 to 4 credit course. That doesn't mean you don't have 1 and 2s once you've been through university, some are 5 and 6s, but the most of your courses are 3 to 4 credit hours.
And on the high school transcript, I probably should ask Salam, but on the high school transcript, would that be transcripted as 1 credit?
If you wouldn't mind, if I could let Salam answer that for us, I want to make sure that you get the most accurate information.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Salam Noor, Assistant Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education, and Madam Chair, Representative Dullum, you are correct, sir. Those articulation agreements that are often reached between a local area high school and a community college or a university will agree on the set of proficiencies, the knowledge and skills that a student would demonstrate, and will equate that to the number of credits that will be issued. So a dual credit program or a dual enrollment program allows the student to complete the 1 credit that's required for them, let's say, to satisfy a language arts or a math requirement, and at the same time be able to obtain equivalent college credit. What I mean by equivalent, it's not a straight one-to-one formula. Sometimes that's determined through the articulation agreement. And sometimes a student would actually engage in a course for the duration of the year that translates into three credits of, let's say, language arts, English, the introductory level English courses at the community colleges and universities would be satisfied by completing 1 or 2 credits at the high school, but it's much more intensive, it's much more rigorous curriculum, if you will, than the traditional high school curriculum.
If I did a ratio 3 credits for 1 credit, would I be okay? Would that be a... When transcripting to the community college, it would be 3 credits. When transcripting to the high school transcript, it would be 1 credit. Ratio about 3 to 1?
Madam Chair, Representative Dullum, it's not exact. I'm not sure exactly how they do the math, but that's always agreed upon in the articulation agreements, that equate the skills and proficiencies associated with that course to the number of community college credits. And you'll have an opportunity to hear from sites that are actually involved in those types of relationships.
I'll hold my questions. Thank you very much.
Representative Roseland and Representative Barr.
I can speak for our school. It was 6 to 1, because a 1 credit is a full-year course at the high school. So a semester generally ended up being equal to one term at a community college, even though a semester was longer. So the relationship at our school generally was six college credits, one high school credit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If a student were to enroll in the same course at a community college, what would the cost be per credit hour?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, it depends on the community college you're going to, but let's say you're going to Chemeketa and they average around $55 per credit. So if you're taking a three-credit course, you're talking about $165. However, if you, and you'll hear more about this, if you happen to be Chemeketa, and I'm using them because we have a coordinator here who coordinates with all the high schools and the college from Chemeketa, so she can correct all this if I get any of it wrong, is that if they currently charge you a transcripting fee, so instead of paying the $165, you might be paying $20 to have it transcripted, to get the paper back and forth, the registration back and forth, those kinds of issues. I think Salem Kaiser School District, my daughter took three English classes, 121, 122, 123. That counted for her full year of English, her senior year. So it wasn't quite what, but it's all in the agreements. And what's fast in the Oregon Revised Statute, it basically says that every community college shall encourage high school students to start early, and there will be a plan, and you have at least this plan in place. So colleges and high schools have that plan in place of how that will equate.
I'm looking at the mic. One more question.
Well, Representative Garland, please.
Is that administrative fee then, in your daughter's case, paid three times or one time?
For her, it was paid three times. For some of the community colleges and the agreements, it is paid once, and it might be different, and they do vary. One of the things that Salam Noor will get to as we go through is this other document, and we'll be walking through all the different kinds of programs we have between community colleges, high schools, and the Oregon University system. And if you happen to jump ahead and look at page 4, as an example, you'll see how many students were enrolled, 6,910 in our tech prep, our technical professional.
It's actually tech prep, and it's not an acronym, so we have to clarify that.
I thought, I can't do this. I can't put it because it really is tech prep, and I thought, I can't get this long name out. You're right. And then dual credit is actually the lower division transfer kind of courses, those that you think of as writing and sociology and history and those kinds of courses. 11,306 students took that. You look at the number of credits earned in the middle there, 97,912 credits in 03-04, which saved Oregonians, as we computed the credits by their different community colleges, approximately $4.5 million, because they were able to get it in the high school, pay a transcript fee, but not pay the full tuition. It begins to give you a sense of the kind of work we are doing together. I can answer more questions about resources, but I wanted to make sure you had a sense of how they worked, since I know that came up at the last committee. And we can go into more of that later on if it comes back up. Is that reasonable with you?
Do we have any further questions before we move forward?
Great. Well, then I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Salam Noor and to really talk about how we do our advanced college credit, our accelerated programs between the high schools and the community colleges and OUS. Salam?
Thank you, Connie. Again, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to be with you here today and share some information on the opportunities that are available for high school students to earn college credit while in high school. First, I would like to express my appreciation for the partnership that we have with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and the Oregon University System. In fact, the Department of Education has an interagency agreement with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to collaborate on delivering services to professional technical education throughout the state. We see them as 9 through 14 continuum rather than just high school programs and community college programs. And we collaborate on all sorts of policy issues that help bridge the gap, if you will, between high schools and community colleges that will allow for a smoother transition for students as they leave high school and pursue their post-high school goals and options. What I'm going to do is provide you with a general overview of these opportunities that are available for students to earn college credit while in high school that satisfy both the high school graduation requirement and also allows them to earn college credit, whether it's community college or university credit. We tend to refer to these opportunities in Oregon as accelerated learning opportunities or accelerated college credit opportunities as described in this document. We have several of them in place. The ones that are fairly well established and common, if you will, are the Tech Prep program, which is often referred to as 2+2, in indicating 2 years of high school preparation coupled with 2 years of community college preparation, and specifically in a technical area, if you will. We also have dual credit programs, advanced placement, and international baccalaureate programs. And the handout that Connie referred to earlier provides you a detailed description of what these programs are about, the number of students that are participating in these programs, and the cost associated with each of them. And I just want to suggest that this is a draft. It's a work in progress. We're still in the process of massaging the language and making it smoother and more communicative, if you will.
Dr. Nguyen,
Madam
do you
Chair.
Have a projected end date or publication date for this document?
Well,
is it for us specifically that you prepared it?
Madam Chair, we actually prepared this document for the State Board last week, and we wanted to have something available for you to share with you these programs. However, we hope that within the next 4 weeks we'll have a much more refined version of it. The information will be the same. We're just trying to modify the language a little bit so it's more, so it's less technical, if you will, and just more descriptive of what these programs are about and the opportunities that students can take advantage of. So hopefully within the next month, we should have a final draft, and we'll be happy to get that to you as well.
Thank you.
So, sure. Again, just to give you a quick overview of these programs, and specifically I'm going to focus on the Tech Prep and the Dual Credit or Dual Enrollment program, which have been in the state for many years. They're not new to us. The Tech Prep program, for example, is really defined as a sequential program of study that provides technical preparation in a variety of career areas. So it tends to really focus on technical areas. So if a student is interested in information technology, they can actually get a head start on that while in high school. If they're interested in engineering, they can begin to access courses, not technical courses that apply to engineering, but the applicable math and language arts and science that are associated with that field to apply towards a college associate degree, for example, in engineering, and they can take that further and apply it towards a four-year degree. So it really puts the students on a path, on a planned path, in terms of courses and opportunities that are available to them that they can start taking advantage of early on. A good example of that, actually, is in Representative Roblin's region. Southwestern Oregon Community College has a nationally recognized information technology program, and it really is referred to as the premier information technology program in the country. They're participating in a national initiative that's sponsored by the U.S. Department of Education and the National Career Directors Association, and they've actually developed that program in conjunction with local area high schools, where high schools can begin to their career in the information technology field while in high school. They can access college-level courses. They can access proficiencies and skills, if you will, that immediately apply towards the community college program. And that allows for a very smooth transition, so the student is not having to repeat classes or repeat work that they've completed at the high school level. And we're very excited about that. The dual credit program is slightly different, but it does lead to awarding secondary and community college credit for approved courses that are offered at the high school, and Connie actually described that very well. Both of these programs, dual credit, dual enrollment, tech prep, if you will, require agreed upon arrangements between the high school and the local area community college and university. And some of these arrangements are not always limited to a local high school and a community college. Some of them are far reaching. So a high school will actually develop an articulation agreement with a community college in its area and may partner with another community college that's miles away. And you will see that from the SIO program in a short while. But these articulation agreements are really critical because they address the issues that pertain to curriculum requirements and course requirements, the quality of the curriculum, the quality of the courses that are part of this program, and to ensure that they are collegiate level. That's what's really critical here. They reach agreements on the number of credits, high school and community college, and how that arrangement will also be articulated. They deal with instructor qualifications, the level of qualifications a high school instructor would need to have, a community college instructor would need to have. They deal with the approval of programs in tech prep, for example. Quite often, the articulation of a secondary to a post-secondary program involves approval of that program according to a set of standards identified by the state for both the high school program and the community college program. So there is a very high quality component that's a part of that as well. They also deal with the number of credits that a student would earn. I'm sorry, I said that already. The student selection and admission to the program and the transcripting requirement. How will the college transcript the student, and how will the high school actually transcript the student? Generally, what we know is that, especially for high school students who take a full academic load throughout their high school career, if you will, they can meet their graduation requirement well before the end of their senior year in high school. And there's a number of reports and publications that address the senior year and how it's not fully maximized by most students that complete their graduation requirements early on. So for students who want to go on to post-secondary education and career training, for example, and from what we know, most students say yes, that they plan to participate or attend a college after high school. Dual enrollment and tech prep programs really offer a leg up in getting through college and may save on college costs in the process. In fact, research, not just Oregon, but national research, indicates that by participating in these programs, students are prepared for academic rigor for college early on while in high school. These programs lower the cost of post-secondary education. If a high school student is able to earn anywhere from 5, 10, 15 credits while they're in high school, that's a full year in post-secondary education. They provide students with more realistic information about college life, especially for those students that are taking those courses on a college campus, if you will. It begins to give them that experience early on. And they provide students options, especially in small and rural areas that don't have a wide range of offerings. In fact, our data indicates that at a small and rural school, students quite often have 40 course offerings compared to 200 at an urban large school, if you will. So it expands the opportunities that are available for students. A couple of more programs that I'll just share with you very briefly also, but Andy Morgan, our Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate Specialist, among other things, will give you more detailed information on them, and that is the Advanced Placement and the International Baccalaureate programs. Those are nationally based programs. They're guided by national protocols that districts and schools have to follow as they offer these options to their students. Those opportunities allow students to take exams in specific subject areas. They're very rigorous, very demanding, and for highly motivated students, they're a wonderful learning opportunity. However, today you'll have an opportunity to hear about a number of new and emerging programs, and these are true innovations in our state. Programs that don't necessarily fit the tech prep model or the dual credit model or the eight. Almost did it. The advanced placement and the international baccalaureate model. And what I really want to stress is that these are true innovations that we're seeing emerge throughout the state, and they have a local flavor to them, and they meet the needs of that individual high school, that individual district, and the community college and the university that they establish a partnership with. Our observation is that they are really crafted to provide to accommodate students, to provide them as many opportunities and options while they're in high school, simply because those options no longer exist at that high school, and the high school principal and superintendent is looking to expand the opportunities available for students. In some instances, it was a community college that went to the high school and said, we're right next door to you. There is no sense for you to offer an information technology program and us to offer an information technology program. Let's pool our resources, let's pool our facilities, and let's offer it together and have it provide access to both high school students and community members as well. So they are really true innovations, and they are very student-centered, meaning that they're looking to benefit the student and the parents and their parents, because they are very cost-effective and begin the college journey early on while the students are in high school. But at any rate, Madam Chair, rather than me describing those programs to you, you'll have an opportunity to hear firsthand from a number of practitioners and exceptional examples throughout the state.
And before we move there, were you entertaining questions?
I would love to entertain some questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lawrence?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think on page 4 of your draft under tech prep, it's requirements for high school instructors, I would imagine, instead of instructions. But that aside, in the requirements for the high school instructors, you take the existing high school instructors and give them some training or particular skills to meet the community college needs, or are we bringing in essentially community college instructors and teaching?
Madam Chair, Representative March, the qualifications for instructors vary from program to program. On the dual credit and the tech prep part, especially as part of a high school community college arrangement, the high school actually describes the qualifications that they would want in that instructor. For a high school instructor, a community college may require that they actually have a master's degree to be eligible to teach that course or to be qualified to teach that course. However, the rules allow for a community college president to waive that requirement if he or she feels that that instructor has the knowledge and the experience and the background to teach it at a collegiate level. That's where the articulation agreement comes into play, because they look at the curriculum, they look at the content, the rigor, the standards of that course and program, and the college president has the opportunity to make that determination. If I may just follow up with that, Connie, on the advanced placement and international baccalaureate, a master's degree is not required. However, there are some protocols that are clearly described by the funders of those programs, if you will, that deal with instructor qualification, that require instructors to participate in professional development that will provide them the skills and the training to be able to deliver that curriculum in the fashion it was intended to. So there are different arrangements that are typically reached between a high school and a community college, or a national program like advanced placement or international baccalaureate.
Chair, Representative March, to follow up on that, if you're talking about an automotive course, you might be looking for somebody who has the skill certification from that area. Talking about something, you've got someone with a business degree, it may actually be... I didn't catch it. May actually be the...
I did, ACE.
Okay. may actually be the master's degree along with X number of hours in economics or in accounting or whatever that might be. So in health, it's also... Each one is, especially in the professional technical area, truly aligned with what you need to be the expert in that field to be teaching at a college level.
Thank you. I really wish that when I was in high school as a senior, I had this program.
Madam Chairman, if I may be permitted a few questions. I'm going to set up a hypothetical situation, because what I want to drill into is the cost. I have a senior. Salam has told us that has almost completed their high school requirements, but I send this senior off to the community college campus. So the student would remain enrolled in high school but attending at the community college. The state FTE for the high school student would be paid to the high school $5,200. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Dullum, there are all sorts of figures floating out there. The ADM is about what we would estimate is close to $7,000.
$7,000. Okay. I'm way old.
But that includes a number of other funding sources calculated.
Okay. But basically, the high school would get $7,000 for the student. Now, when the student goes to the community college's FTE charge would be how much?
For our full-time equivalent, say it's going to be approximately $3,000.
$3,000.
Just rounding things off here to make it all work for you.
Okay. Then with the tuition, the high school would pay the tuition, and that would be about $440 that the high school would pay for this person.
Well, if we took a person who went full-time, let's take Chemeketa again. It would be $660 tuition if they were full-time at Chemeketa. 12 hours, 55, comes up to 660.
We're pretty close.
And then you'd have whatever fees is there, because sometimes depending on what course they take, it might...
Books, that sort of lab fees. That
right, all those kinds of things, correct.
And that money would come out of the $7,000 and over to the community college. So it would be a debit for the high school, but a credit for the community college.
Depending on the Madam Chair.
We're just dialoguing.
Okay, good. But depending on the agreement, some high school students, when we talk about the SIO program here, the PACE program, they're paying the full tuition, the fees, and the books for their students to be going to Limbenton Community College. But it's based on a plan being ready, and some of them are going full-time, some of them are part-time. There's a variety of things. Some high schools release a student to a community college, and the student pays their entire way because it's something they've wanted to do. The high school believes it has something in place. Student doesn't want to do that, so the student pays its own way. So you can't always say who's paying what. You'll get down to each single agreement. But if you were to take your... Just if one's getting $7,000 and one's getting $3,000, and then you subtract off from the one how much tuition for a term, and so most likely there's $7,000, that'd be $6,000 times three terms, because they'd be doing that for three terms if you're using the $7,000, which is for a full year. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So as you go through that process, you've got about $2,000 that they would put in tuition for that year. And they would have gotten $7,000 for that student. However, they kept the student on their rolls. They provided the counseling and advising, and they are the ones that the college would refer them back to if they had a problem. They'd refer them back to the high school because they have not been released to college. They are there as a visiting student. They are still considered a high school student.
What would happen if the student didn't show up at the high school? Would the cost be the same?
What would go one step further with him? Say, don't start with the high school.
Let's take our student and make him 19, deciding, whoops, I dropped out. I want to return to the community college. The cost then to the state would just be $3,000, wouldn't it, per term?
Correct, Representative Dahl.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, you wanted to make.
Madam Chair, if I may, Representative Dahl, I think that's a really critical nuance, if you will, here, because we're talking about traditional high school students that are still in high school, receiving all the services that a high school provides them on a regular basis, but they leave the high school or while in high school take advantage of these expanded options or these accelerated learning opportunities to earn college credit while in high school. I think, Representative Villam, the example that you shared relative to a 19-year-old that has actually dropped out of high school and wants to come back in, whether we count them as a high school student or a college student, that really puts them in a completely different category. And high schools can provide services to students that have dropped out in terms of credit recovery. They could do that at the high school through an alternative education program or through community college programs that high schools and districts have contracted with to actually serve those students, to help them with their credit recovery and to help them achieve a GED, for example.
Not to delay the rest of the presentation, but just before you leave the discussion on the discretion that is had by the college or the high school to on the licensure requirement for the high school person providing these college level work. Is that made on a case-by-case basis, or is that flexibility provided within the agreement entered by the parties?
Madam Chair, the rules that are in place do require high school faculty, high school teachers, faculty members that want to participate, want to teach a course that's a dual credit course or a tech prep course. Dual credit, primarily tech prep, falls into more the technical area, and there are other qualifications that come into play, like the industrial certification, for example. But let's say in a dual credit, dual enrollment course, the rules do say that the instructor has to have a master's degree in order to be able to teach that course, because technically it's a community college course. However, they do allow for flexibility for the president of that college to waive that requirement, and that's available to everyone, all 17 colleges, 17 community colleges in the state. But the general rule is that they have to have a master's degree in order to teach that course at the high school.
So the president of the community college will make the determination on whether or not to waive that requirement on a case-by-case basis.
Madam Chair, you're absolutely right. Okay. It is based on the qualification, the experience, the number of teaching, the numbers of years of teaching, et cetera. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything further? Are there any high school students? Could it conceivably happen that a high school student would want to participate in this program because high school would not allow him for some reason?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, that can be the case. High schools and community colleges together agree to the program, and so some high schools may choose not to be involved with the program for a variety of reasons. They might have a very, very good advanced placement program, and they can only handle so many options within their teaching load. Other areas might be because you've had people over time teaching tech prep courses. Some people change. They choose not to get the requirements to come back into it. So there are cases where a student might say, I would like this. The high school might say, I can't do that. However, our observation is over the past 10 years, what we've seen is only growth. We haven't seen these things going backwards. So what we see is more and more high schools, both in advanced placement and in tech prep and in the dual credit, increasing because they're trying to assist their students who are college ready to take those college ready things now and then move on. So I don't see it decreasing. I see it increasing at this point in time. That's where all the trends are. Great. Well, what we'd like to do next is start letting you hear from people who actually have a closer contact with the programs. And I'd like to ask both Andrea Morgan from it, who is the Oregon Department of Ed, and David McDonald, who's with the Oregon University System, to come talk about Advanced Placement, International Baccalaureate, and Gear Up. Gear Up is a program that supports advanced placement. So I thought it would really help when I have them both on either side of me. And Andrew, I'm going to let you begin, and then I'll let David go from there.
Madam Chair and the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Morgan, and today I'm here as the specialist that works with Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate. I also, before I went to the Department of Education, I taught a dual enrollment class and an advanced placement class at the same time, same place. I taught a U.S. history class, and the two worked very well together, so students who needed the advanced placement option could get that credit. Students who wanted the dual credit through the community college could do that. So I have some experience with these programs as well. Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate are both copyrighted curriculums. They offer a number of courses, and it's really up to the school or district which part of the program they want to offer. In Advanced Placement, they offer, I believe, it's 57 courses in 36 subject areas. And it's up to the district and the school as to which of those they provide. Teachers do not have to meet the requirement of a master's degree with advanced placement because what they figure is the examination is what sets the rigor and make sure that the quality is there. And so teachers that are interested, although I always suggest that they do have training through the College Board, who is the organization that provides advanced placement, that they get some of this training just so that they understand the examinations that their students are going to be taking and so that they can help them succeed. But so in this way, they don't necessarily have to have the master's degree. Many of them do. And again, many of them are teaching two kinds of courses at the same time. Students take examinations at the end of the course, usually in May. They are very rigorous examinations. This last year, in 2004, we had 4,295 students that took examinations, with about 2,772 of them scoring a 3 to 5 on the exam, which means that's in the range where most students are going to be able to get some kind of credit for that examination. It's up to the universities and colleges and community colleges exactly how that translates with advanced placement. And so it differs from institution to institution. But if they score a 3 to 5, in some schools they will get actual credit for a course and not, you know, they will be granted the hours and they can move on. In some, it allows them to move immediately to upper division courses. Again, it's really up to the institution how that examination score translates. In Oregon, too, we have international baccalaureate schools, and these are the schools that offer the international baccalaureate diploma. And this is an international program. It came about trying to come up with a way to have an education program that could be recognized not only in the United States, but in foreign countries as well, and with their institutions of higher learning. And so it has its own curriculum. It is different from a traditional high school curriculum in the subjects that are offered and how it is based very much on developing thinking skills. Students then take examinations at the end of the courses in this program as well, and then if they complete their examinations and if they pass those exams, they can receive an international baccalaureate diploma, which also then is recognized by our institutions of higher learning in various ways. It's up to the institution what they do with that credential. We have 13 international baccalaureate high schools in Oregon, and we see more and more schools becoming interested in starting at the elementary school level, because international baccalaureate has programs for elementary school with the idea that you start training students early so that they're ready for international baccalaureate study at the end. Both of these programs can be supported through the Advanced Placement Incentive Program grant, which we received. It's a 3-year grant for about $1 million from the federal government. We're unable, because of the mandates of that grant, to pay for dual credit enrollment, but we can pay to train teachers to work on vertical team alignment, which means that we train teachers in middle school, early high school, so that they can be teaching students and getting the curriculum to a level where kids are ready then to take advanced placement, rigorous coursework at the high school level. We also are able to support the examinations through the test fee program grants that go along with this. Actually, there are two separate grants that Oregon has. We have about $180,000 available. This year, $65,000 to pay for the examinations. So if a student qualifies, if they qualify for free and reduced lunch, they also qualify for us to pay for their advanced placement or their international baccalaureate examinations. Examinations go for, I think they're $82 per exam for advanced placement, and it depends on which examination with international baccalaureate, but it ranges between $100 and $250 per examination, and so we can pay for those students. This last year we paid for 729 Oregon students' exams for advanced placement. We've seen continuing growth. Since we began the program with test fee program, we've seen a 300% increase in the number of low-income students that have been taking advanced placement examinations, and we've been seeing about 160% increase in the number of low-income students able to take international baccalaureate exams. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a couple. In terms of numbers, what do those percentages represent, the 300% increase and the 160% increase?
When we first started the test fee program, Madam Chair, they we were testing maybe 150 students using the TESV program. The low-income students simply were not taking these courses, many times we believe because they couldn't afford the exams at the end. Now we're testing over 700 students, and it continues to grow each and every year. This is just since 2001. So we've seen a growth from about 150 students to 729.
Okay. A moment. In your introductory comments, you indicated the number of courses and in the number of disciplines. And I thought you said 50-some courses in 30-some disciplines. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that does vary from the information that's on the draft report.
Okay. And maybe I got the wrong numbers.
And
the draft. I'm going to go with the draft report. Yeah, 34 courses. Where did I get those other numbers? These are exactly the numbers. 34 courses, 19 disciplines. I'm sorry.
And then, and I'm only just maybe it was different data, so I'm just going to double-check this one, too. You indicated there were 4,000-plus exams taken, you said, last year.
Right.
That indicates 2487
right.
in the 30304.
Right, and we know with some new numbers that the College Board has come in, they change what is on our invoices and what we are paying for. And as schools submit for payment, some of them have done it later than others. I was giving you the latest invoice numbers from what appeared here. So
the 4,000 plus would be more accurate.
Yes.
Representative,
can you tell me how many schools offer advanced placement courses compared to what percentage of our high schools offer advanced placement?
That's very difficult to determine which offer the courses. We know that we have 164 high schools that had test takers, but we don't collect the data necessarily on which ones are actually offering courses. You can take advanced placement examinations without having taken a course. Of course, you're taking the risk of not having covered the entire curriculum, but students can take advanced placement examinations without being in a course. We know that we have 164 schools with test takers.
And what percentage of the total number of high schools would that represent?
We have...
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, for the record, Dave McDonald, Oregon University System. That represents about 54-55% of the public high schools in the state of Oregon. And that's a pretty constant number year in, year out for the last 5 years.
Yeah. And a follow-up question, Madam Chair. Do we have any notion of where those high schools are? What I'm getting at is do our rural students have an opportunity for advanced placement, and our small schools, do they have the same opportunity that large schools do?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, that's exactly the point of the Advanced Placement Incentive Program grant, is to help low-income students and schools, but also to work with rural schools. And what we have found is that because of some of the programs, we've seen an increase in our rural areas. It's still not what it is in the metropolitan area, for instance. But we've seen an increase because we're also supporting online courses. And so students are able to take advanced placement courses online through various providers, some of them through the universities, some of them through commercial organizations that provide the courses, but we're paying for them, and so we are seeing an increase. And I think when you hear from David McDonald, he'll also talk about Gear Up and their emphasis on low-income schools, rural schools. We've targeted those schools with the Advanced Placement Incentive Program grant, and so we are seeing increases in the number of courses available.
Thank you.
No questions for Ms. Morgan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dave McDonald, Director of Enrollment Student Services, Oregon University System, and also the statewide director of the Oregon Gear Up program. Oregon Gear Up is a federally supported partnership with Oregon high schools and middle schools. One of the components that we have in this program, which currently serves 12,000 students across the state and 39 middle and high schools, is increasing the rigor of the curriculum middle and high school. The belief is that in order for students to qualify for advanced courses such as advanced placement, international baccalaureate, the dual enrollment programs, they must be academically solid starting in middle school years. And so we've taken a middle school up approach. We have as one of our performance indicators of our grant the number of students who are participating in advanced placement courses, as well as the number of students who score a 3 or above, which is traditionally viewed as a passing score, kind of the cutoff at that point. However, it should be noted that universities and colleges vary in terms of what scores we recognize. Some universities only recognize a 5 or higher for awarding of credit. Others will do a 3, perhaps a 4, depending upon the subject matter. So there is some variation in that, and that is by design from the College Board itself. One of the things that we've really tried to work with our schools is to make sure that the teachers were prepared to offer curriculum that was aligned middle to high school to college. And as part of that, we've worked with the College Board and the Advanced Placement Incentive Program that Andrea manages to make sure that we maximize the opportunities for our teachers. We have been able to train over 160 teachers in our schools since 2002 when the grant began. The results are now starting to show up, and we feel that over time these results will continue to grow. But to give you a sense of what we've done with our very focused and intense approach looking at rural schools, looking at schools that serve very high poverty communities, and that is a statutory requirement of the GEAR Up program, is that we serve very high, pardon the contradiction, but high low-income serving communities. Our increase in number of AP courses offered since 2002 is almost 200%. The statewide average over that same period of time is 140%. Now, these are schools such as where Representative Roblem had principled and counseled for years before, which really do not have opportunities built into the community. Approach to education is not part of the expectation, or perhaps the teachers don't have enough opportunity in the scheduling of courses they can do, or their training and background to offer a lot of rigorous courses. We've gone in and tried to help increase that. The number of exams is really important, because if you look at number of courses offered, that's one indicator. If students aren't taking the courses, we've missed our mark. We've increased in that same period of time by 152% the number of students in our GEAR Up schools who have taken advanced placement courses. The statewide average in that same period of time is 56%, a very healthy increase, but again, showing where we've had greater growth in our programs. And the mastery. The final indicator is making sure that our students do well in the exams. It isn't enough to take the exams. They must master at a 3 or higher. We're at 162% increase of students who scored 3 or above. The statewide average is 64%. So our approach seems to be working well. It is one indication of how this can work. It is expensive. We spend about $4,000 every time we do a training for teachers. That covers 30 teachers for a single-day training. It is a day-long curricular training, and we ask them to come in groups. So it isn't just one math teacher from one high school, but a math teacher and his or her colleagues from that department at that high school and some middle school faculty. And we work at it bottom-up. In the light of time, and knowing we might have more opportunity to talk about this program later on, I'll stop at that point and just refer you to a handout we do have in your packet, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. McDonald? Well, then let's move forward. Now, committee, in the event we need to move past 3 o'clock in order to complete, which I'm hoping we don't, but we want to be thorough and respect the time of those who are here to present to us, I would ask that those that can stay would, please, and we'll try to make sure that we're all happy.
Okay. Madam Chair and the committee, so in essence, you got an overview of what was on page 3 of this about advanced placement and National Baccalaureate. I'd now like to ask Cynthia Risen, who is director for the Mibelamin Education Consortium, to come share in a brief, like, 5-minute, 7-minute overview for you how the program around dual credit and tech prep works within an area between the college and the high schools. Cynthia?
Madam Chair and committee members, again, my name is Cynthia Risen. I'm the director of the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium. Thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss with you an example of how successful high school community college partnerships provide high school students dual credit opportunities. As previously stated by Commissioner Cam Prouse-Brawley, Dr. Connie Green, and Dr. Salam Noor, it is essential to Oregon's future that more high school students successfully move from high school to community college or university settings. With changing standards in the K-12 schools continuing challenges regarding access to community colleges. Chemeketa Community College is working to maintain and improve high school partnerships through curriculum alignment and opportunities for high school students to earn college credits. The Mid-Willamette Education Consortium is an alliance of 33 high schools, Willamette Education Service District, Chemeketa Community College, and multiple community partners in Marion Polk and Yamhill Counties. That's our region, Marion Polk and Yamhill Counties. The Mid-Willamette Education Consortium is charged with managing the Carl Perkins Grant and the Workforce Investment Youth Resources. We're also charged with supporting high schools in implementation of the graduation requirements. The Mid-Willamette Education Consortium staff manage Chemeketa Community College's dual credit program, College Credit Now. That's what we call it, College Credit Now. As Dr. Connie Green and Dr. Salam Noor explained, the College Credit Now program provides high school students with the opportunity to receive high school credit and community college credit at the same time for college-level work while completing their high school program. High school instructors teach the course and course content that is reviewed and approved in collaboration with the community college faculty. Course outlines and textbooks are reviewed for college equivalency in order to maintain the integrity of college accreditation. The courses that are available for College Credit Now are listed in your brochure. The blue brochure is just a general brochure that lists the courses that are available in program areas. Then the red one is specific by high school. So for all of those 33 high schools, we offer this brochure. And the example that I pulled out is McMinnville's. High school teachers must first be approved by Chemeketa's program director prior to the course being offered as College Credit Now as an option to the high school students. Teachers must meet the same hiring standards as instructors who teach in the same discipline or program at Chemeketa. They must meet that same standard, and we've talked about that earlier today. High school students register for the college course, pay $25 per course, $25 per course, and complete the coursework. At the end of that high school course, the student's grade is posted to their Chemeketa transcript. And in that shell, high school students can begin to invest time and money in their college careers while they're still in high school. The registration fee for all College Credit Now courses is $25 per student per course. And as you can see in the brochure, we've done some of that math for you. The general tuition at Chemeketa Community College is $168 for a three-credit course. The College Credit Now fee is $25 per course. So that's a heck of a savings. Students, I want to stress that students may not go to Chemeketa. They may not step foot at Chemeketa. But this is their Chemeketa transcript to take with them wherever, whenever they decide to go on to a college. It's their transcript for life, just like a transcript that I would receive or a transcript that you would receive. As Dr. Green explained, the trend is growing. I was looking at some of our numbers 10 years ago. Approximately 8,000 credits were earned by students in Marion Polk and Yamhill counties. Last year, those high school students earned over 16,000 credits. That's a savings at Chemeketa's rate of over $740,000. The number of college credit earned by those high school students has doubled in 10 years. We are also working with local high schools to align curriculum. I have a sample of a career pathway brochure for McMinnville High School. Again, I pulled the McMinnville High School. And this brochure lists the College Credit Now courses, the pre-program courses to meet the prerequisites that are identified there at McMinnville High School, and then the courses that align with the one-year program for the health service management programs. This is a draft that we're working on with McMinnville High School. The other point that I'd like to stress is that the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium is not unique in Marion Polk and Yamhill counties. There's a consortium and a dual credit program in every county and every region in the state. And we are working with other consortiums around the state to increase high school students' academic achievement level so students will be prepared for success in post-secondary education and the workplace. We are also working to improve both the academic and professional technical preparation of students. and we are working to create a coordinated system between high schools and the community college. Again, these opportunities are available to students in every county. There are College Credit Now type programs and year-end reports, that the purple document that is also available. We all produce a year-end report and numbers for our dual credit programs around the state. Clackamas Community College, Portland Community College, Columbia Gorge Community College, Lane Community College, and Southwestern Oregon Community College all produce year-end reports and have reports on their dual credit programs. I've included my business card, and if you would like additional information on the program in your district, you can contact me. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you about high school community college partnerships and how students can earn college credit while they're in high school. I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Any questions from the board?
Thank you very much. The funds that come out of the Workforce Investment Act, I think there are several titles. Do you know which one your funds would come from?
Madam Chair and Representative Shields, the Workforce Investment Act youth dollars that the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium manages are the Title I dollars.
Would you say that from the rural perspective, it's easier for them to make these than it is to AP courses, for example, and having instructors?
Madam Chair and Representative Roblin, I am less familiar with the AP Advanced Placement Program. I can speak for a variety of different points of view. One would be in terms of being approved to offer the dual credit program or college credit now. It is sometimes more difficult for high school instructors to become approved for college credit now because it calls for a master's degree in the discipline, for example, in writing or in math. And it may be easier for that high school teacher to offer the advanced placement program. I think that, as the speakers before me explained, there's been a huge effort around the state to offer it to the rural communities. And as Andrea Morgan explained, she was a high school teacher at Silverton, and she was able to offer both the advanced placement and college credit now in history. We really don't want to turn this into an either-or, but a both.
I'm interested in the rural area. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I think
she doesn't find me for that, but I'm on thin ice here. Madam Chairman.
Sir.
I'm looking at rural Oregon in a different sense than you. I'm looking at Spray, Fossil, Mitchell, Maupin, Dufer, Rufus. Are these programs available in those schools?
Madam Chair and Representative Dahlem, in Marion Pook and Yamhill County, we have also Fall City, Perrydale, so we also have some very small rural high schools. And we have every school in our region participating in college credit now. We do not have every school in our region participating in advanced placement, but every school in our region is participating in college credit now.
From a rural school, if a student comes into the college, I'm going back to this ADM thing. A student could conceivably be in the community college full time, couldn't they?
Representative Dahlem and Madam Chair, I don't know of any student in Marion Pook and Yamhill counties that is in high school and participating through college credit now full time. I don't know. I know that the SIO students behind me, I was whispering to them, and they had participated in their version of our College Credit Now. They call it College Now in Lynn Benton, and are now participating in the PACE program, and you'll be able to hear about their experiences being at a community college.
Thank you.
Great. With that, if you go on to page 5, you'll see that there's some emerging accelerated options that are happening. So I'd like to ask the SciOps students to come forward. And you'll notice that there's one at the top about Western Willamette Professional Technical Consortium. It really is a consortium that is Polk County High Schools and Chemeketa and Willamette ESD working together on professional technical careers. Right below that is Promoting Accelerated College Entry, or called PACE. And we have a group of five. I think I've got it here. Everybody? I should say, and Limbeck Community College. Bruce, do you want to pull this chair over right here, please? What I'm going to ask to do is ask all of my members here who are visiting with us to introduce themselves. I'm going to start with the coordinator at, which happens to be the principal, also at South High School, Gary Temple, to kind of begin and then introduce as we go the students and also then our Lynn Benton Community College counterpart that helps make this all happen. Gary?
Okay, Madam Chairman and representatives of the committee, my name is Gary Temple. I'm the principal of SIO High School. This is our first time to do this, so we'll just kind of muddle through this. I've been at SIO for 21 years. We are a small high school, 220 students, about 19 miles from everywhere. We started the PACE program this year, and I will tell you there's a brochure in your packet, and we will probably not be able to give you all the nuances of the program today, but I would certainly be glad to speak with any of you individually or as a group again if you would like to know more information. Traditionally, at SIO High School, we had one path, and everyone was to get on it. This year, we started multiple pathways, and truly there are multiple pathways. When I sat with students last spring, I was amazed to find out that no size fit anyone twice. And so I gained a great appreciation for what community colleges and universities do with students. Because truly we had to model the program to each individual student. We have students who are in the PACE program, which stands for Promoting Accelerated College Entry, who are taking as few as one college class off campus and six classes on campus, and some that are taking all their classes off campus, and then several that are mixing and matching. The thing that I think is phenomenal about the program is our entry requirements. And so our entry requirements are that you have a 3-point, that you meet your SIM standards, that you take your placement test, and you finish your Metro Monte program. It has truly changed the conversations that we've had with parents and students. For the first time, after we presented the program to the students, I had a student come to me and say, "Hey, I took those tests. I didn't do very good. I wasn't taking them seriously. Could I take them again?" She took them that afternoon and passed them all. Another student in one of our interviews had missed the science requirement, and I said, "You know, how did you do on the science test this year?" Her comment was, "If I'd known it was important, I would have taken it more seriously the first time." At the counter at registration, we have given traditionally SIM transcripts to every one of our students. Never in the last 6 years that we've been doing it, until this year, did I ever have a parent come to the counter and say, "Tell me where my son is on this. Are they behind?" And when they found out that their son was behind, turned to the son and said, "Why are you behind? You need to get this done. This is important. We want you part of this program." In essence, the program works like this. We pay for tuition and books. We offer a bus to LB. We don't offer one to Chemeketa yet, only because of the numbers.
LB is Lynn
Benton Community College. Thanks. I was going to pay up front.
I will pay your fine.
Thank you. And we have a contact there at Lynn Benton Community College with his Kathy Chafin, and then we worked through a series of people at Chemeketa to meet each of the students' needs. We now offer four different diplomas at Scioto High School. We offer a regular diploma, which is 24 and a half credits, an honors component to that, and we offer an advanced diploma, which is 32 and a half credits, and we offer an honors component to that. And so we have had, to this point, over, and we just started this fall, so 25 students in the program. Amazingly, we touched 24 lives that we wouldn't have done before. And knowing a school of, or a district of 600, 24 lives is significant. We've had students return from homeschooling to be part of both our high school and the program, return from private schooling. And we've had some students who just wanted to continue on in the program. And so truly, it has changed how we talk to parents and how we talk to students. We deal with this as a K-12 program. My goal is for a fourth grader to have hope, to know that there's something they can do when they get to high school, break cycles of poverty. We see a huge GPA gap between 3-5 students and 2-5 students. We want to close that gap. We hope that over time that we will have the less need for remedial courses, allowing us to reinvest into our system. It's going to become crucial for our third graders to be able to read fluently. We're going to have to establish after-school programs to help get those kids caught up so we have safety nets. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to the students because they are truly the powerful ambassadors. And they asked me to start them off with a question, and so I will. And the question is going to be, what difference has it made to you so far? And I will have them each introduce themselves as they go. And so with that, Eric.
Madam Chairman, representatives of the committee. I'm Eric Blumenstein, a senior at Scioto High School. What this program has meant for me is, of course, that every high school student, as they progress through high school, begins to care less and less as the monotony melds in. And what this has done for me is it really has boosted my will to do better at school. And with this program, I feel it really gives me a push ahead of what many of the other students in the state have. And I just feel it's a great program. I'm very happy with it, very glad that Mr. Temple has gone through all of the trouble to put this together for us. Thank you. Right now I'm taking Writing 122, Math 111, Political Science 201, and Spanish 102 at Chemeketa Community College.
Eric, may I ask you a question?
Yes, I'm sure.
Did you feel not challenged before you entered this program? Is that why you were kind of lethargic about your senior year?
There were certain times when I did feel not as challenged because being at a small school, we didn't have the opportunities to do AP programs. So it was, for instance, my English classes, I seemed to excel in those more than with other classes. But the students that didn't care would sometimes hold back the rest of the class. So now I feel like it puts me up with a level where I can be pushed more.
Okay. I think Representative Dolan would like to ask a question.
You're a full-time student at Chemeketa.
Yes, I'm taking, I believe, 15 credits, and then I'm also participating in band first period at my high school because Chemeketa does not have a music program. So.
Curious, Eric, how do you get to band class? How do you do that? Logistically.
Band starts at 8:15 and goes until 9:15, so I drive there in the morning, and then my writing class is my first class of the day, and I drive, and that starts at 10:30, so it gives me time to get there.
And you get yourself to Chemeketa.
Yeah, I drive my own car. So.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm Brittany Broadbent. I'm also a senior at Scio High School, and I'm attending Lynn Benton Community College. This program, to me, just, like you said, just finally challenged me in high school. I was finally met with something that I couldn't just float through, and it just kind of, I guess, like, made your day more interesting, because I was able to, I go to high school in the morning. Like he does, Mr. Temple was really good about scheduling the classes that we wanted to take at the high school in the morning for us, so we could take afternoon classes at the college. So it's nice to still be involved in your high school, but be able to have all the benefits of being a full-time college student, which I am. I'm taking 15 credits, and it's really nice to finally be challenged and be involved in two different schools. And I think that the biggest opportunity probably that it gave to me was that at the end of this year, I'll be a year ahead, and I had, like, throughout high school considered taking a year off to be involved as, like, a state officer through the FFA organization, or, which is not an acronym, by the way. It is FFA.
It actually stands for something.
Not anymore. They changed it.
We'll pay that.
No.
It's changed. It's FFA all alone. All right. So, like, it just gives me the opportunity to do that and not fall behind as far as college goes, or, you know, to travel if I really want to, but I'll probably just go to school next year if I'm not a state officer. But it's really helpful to be a year ahead and to have that prompting, I guess.
Any questions for me?
Oh.
Connie, could you just have everybody swap chairs?
Mm-hmm.
What courses are you taking at the high school?
Well, I have a writing 123 class, a math center, history 202, and English 401.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Cassandra Smith, and I am attending Lynn Benton Community College. This program really has just pushed us forward as students individually, because now we're not required to, you know, be in classes that you have to fulfill certain things. You can pick and choose at the college of, like, what really interests you, and it gives you more opportunities, I believe, as a person and as for education goes. Mr. Temple has really brought in a lot to our eyes on how SIO does educate and how we really do have opportunities out there that are good for us, and that I'm glad that this program is there, because it has helped me go to college and realize that there's a lot of opportunities out there, and it's just helped me grow personally to see all the opportunities of anything that I choose to do. And I don't know, I'm really thankful for having this program. Lynn Benton is a very diverse college, and it's a lot different from high school. So at first I was very intimidated going into a college, being a year ahead in high school, but yet in a way you're behind in college because I am younger than most people there. But it's a lot of time that you put into working at the college, which I think at the high school you do put a lot in, but you kind of do just do what you have to do to kind of get by. But at the college, it pushes you to actually have to do your work. The professors don't let you slide by with, you know, some late work here or any of that. It's, you have to be responsible for yourself. You have to know when things need to be in, and it just helps me kind of, like, grow up and realize that it's time to get out there. And I love college. I am so glad that I ended up, I am full-time, well, I'm only taking 11 credits, but it's a lot of fun just being at the college and experiencing something that not everyone in the state has yet, and I really like it. I'm taking a writing 115, math 95, and an interpersonal speech 218, which I hope to go into business, but we'll see.
I think Eric made a comment that sounds like it might apply to all of you, and you can correct it or address it for me, and that is you felt a little constrained by the others in your class, and you felt like you were not advancing to your potential.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. True, that is very true.
And you are a senior.
Yes, I am a senior at high school.
Representative Groveland and then Representative Barr.
Thank you, Chair.
His hand just goes up.
I know.
I know.
I guess I would ask all three of the students again. Are you involved in other activities at school? Obviously, FAA.
And the two classes I take in the morning at the high school are my agriculture class, and then I take the yearbook class, and I serve as the editor for that.
Well, I have only band, but that also extends to pet band at football and basketball games. And this spring, it also applies to marching band, which would be a part of it.
Just sports for me at high school.
But you are participating in sports.
Oh, yeah.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for you, and I know what the grade point requirement is to enter the program, and without embarrassing you in any way, can you tell me, has your grade point average increased uniformly since you've been in the college program?
Mine has, yes.
Am I allowed to jump in? I would tell you that we averaged a 3.22 GPA last term.
2.2 average.
Yeah.
When students are enrolled in the program, I'll say this correctly, there is an incentive then to stay in high school. You would pile up credits to where you could graduate, but the incentive would be to stay in high school, dual diploma, and a couple of things. I suppose the price of the credits, the value of the course, there is just an incentive to stay in high school.
We have two students, for example, who accelerated themselves and would have graduated last year with their diploma, high school diploma, after 3 years. And so they stayed with us and went through the program this year. So
do you, they've got the credits, do you just withhold their diploma and let them keep piling them up?
Well, there's actually no, a lot of students have the credits they need by fall term their senior year to graduate. But there's, I mean, our system is not geared towards graduating students in the fall, and so they would naturally stay all year anyway. We've kind of geared high school to be a four-year experience too, and so it just fits for them. And so in this case, they got to do the best of both worlds.
In the little brief outline, it said that everybody goes to high school full-time. Kind of program. And part of that is those students that don't make it this program, are they encouraged to be in school all day long?
This, as you might guess, this program also arose out of two other needs. One, I had a freshman student who took the state math test as a freshman and got 100%. He is in calculus as a sophomore. I'm going to need something different from him next year. The other problem we have is, and I don't know that I'd have this discussion with you 6 years ago. 6 years ago, every student had to have a full-time schedule. And through changes, it became seniors had a period off, and seniors had two periods off. This year I have walking sophomores who have a period off campus, and that's because we can't accommodate 43 kids in art. And so we didn't have the course offerings to make that effective. And we were getting to the point where seniors were two periods off campus, had two periods of work experience, had three classes on campus, and were coming a couple of times a week. And they were starting to encourage others to go with them. And so this spiral downward effect was occurring. And so we've actually, I think, starting to hold the course now, and we're starting to spiral back up. Does that answer your...
Yes.
With this... Thank you, Madam Chairman. With this participation in the college courses, does it release some of your teaching time to offer freshman-sophomore courses or more freshman-sophomore courses?
What I'm hoping... I know I'm doing this wrong, so, Madam Chairman.
You and I will do fine.
Okay. We were able to cut one section of English 12 this year, okay, and replace it with psychology. So we gained an elective back. My hope is that we're going to see a spiral effect. And instead of having 33 kids in English 9, I'm going to be able to go back to three sections of English 9 or three sections of English 10 and then continue that spiral downward till we get to the point where we have all-day kindergarten, where we have after-school programs, so that we have safety nets built in naturally into our system to catch those kids as they need it throughout. And so does that answer?
Very well. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, there's one person you have not heard from yet, and that is Bruce Clementson, who's Associate Dean of Enrollment at Lynn Benton. What I'd like Bruce to address in a very short window of time, like a couple minutes, is, and the others to be aware that we're having to shorten up back here behind me, is Lynn Benton has a unique role in that they have this dual enrollment with the high school and themselves. They also have a dual enrollment program between their college students and their university partner at Oregon State. So, Bruce, as you do these two different kind of dual enrollment programs from high school to community college and community colleges with Oregon State, could you quickly give them the how that works and why that benefits students from SIO as well as your other students?
Madam Chair and representatives of the committee, I'm Bruce Clementson, Associate Dean of Enrollment Management at Lynn Benton Community College. And to look at Gary's program, it was exciting for him to approach us with this very creative idea, and we really appreciate having the opportunities to find creative solutions for various partners we have in our district, and this is a unique one. We don't know if we can replicate it with other schools in the district. It depends on our relationships, our curriculums, and the motivations, but this has certainly served well a number of students in a very unique situation. We offer college now credit around the state, actually. We have programs in agriculture that are all over the state of Oregon. And through our College Now program, we and the SIO program, we really try to articulate a faster way to a bachelor's degree through partnerships like this one, through the courses we offer in College Now dual credit, and with our relationship with Oregon State University. We have one example of a student who has absolutely maximized these two partnerships. We recently had a student come out of one of our district high schools with 40 dual credits earned through Lynn Benton at their high school. They then were eligible to be admitted to Oregon State University through our dual enrollment agreement. She spent 1 year at Lynn Benton Community College because that's all the courses she had left that she needed. Immediately began taking courses at Oregon State that we did not offer, but that she had the prerequisites to begin completing at Oregon State. She completed her bachelor's degree in 3 years total, And the money she saved in loans and time afforded her a master's degree in teaching. She was a first-generation student. Her mother never went to college. She was from a single-parent family and the last of four children. She's the one that made it, and it's because of the creations of these kinds of programs. So our partnerships in all of these are wonderful, and what makes them work well is our ability to tailor these partnerships to our individual partners and to the needs of the students in our area. And we're very happy with Gary's program and the staff that I have that work with this, the advisor that works with these students. We were just pleased to see their performance and how their enrollment has continued and that they're staying with the program at some level, and they are pursuing their degrees. And I think their GPA speaks for their abilities and speaks for their persistence. And I think the one area as well is they completed virtually every credit they started at the college. They didn't withdraw from classes. They hung in there and they did well. And that's the support they get from the school and the support they get from the people on our campus.
Madam Chair of the Committee, if I could thank this group and get the next group up very quickly.
Yep.
Thank you very much for it. Appreciate so much of your share.
And they did well.
And they did well. And I only think you're down a couple dollars, Representative Dahlem, in this process so far. Who I have joining me at this point in time is the Middle College. And if you flip over the draft on page 6, you'll see Clackamas Middle College. It is another way of doing this kind of work. There's not one way to do this. And what we're trying to show you is based on the partnerships and based on the needs, we've been, the high schools and the community colleges in OUS have been trying very hard to find the right connections here. Donna Accord, which is to my left, Associate Dean of Ascended Learning at Clackamas Community College, will give a brief overview and then a few comments from the others, and we'll keep it short.
Okay. Yes, we will. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. And again, my name is Donna Accord. I'm the Associate Dean of Extended Learning at Clackamas Community College. I'm just going to give you an overview of the middle college structure. I just want to add my thanks. This is our first time to testify as well, and I hope we do as well as the SIO team did, especially the students. They were really awesome. Clackamas Middle College represents a partnership between North Clackamas School District and Clackamas Community College. It was developed to provide early college access to students referred from New Urban High School, which is a charter school of North Clackamas School District. The Clackamas Middle College staff at the community college select the students for acceptance to the college based on screening and interviewing the students to make sure that they're ready for college. So their eligibility is determined by their SIM achievement and college level asset scores, as any student would need to go through. We also check for their maturity of attitude and behavior to make sure it's appropriate for the college campus. We check their academic goals to make sure that they include a college plan, their prior grades, and recommendations by their high school instructors and counselors. Since the students are referred from a charter school, they may come from a variety of backgrounds, including traditional high school, alternative school, homeschooling, and even outside the district since it is a charter school, although most of them do come from the Clackamas School District. Students take a Bridges class at the college, which is a high school transition class, high school to college transition class. They take that together with other middle college students to prepare for entry and success in college. They receive personal academic advising and counseling on planning their college classes to fulfill their career goals and to meet their high school diploma requirements. They earn dual credit for the college classes that they take. They also need to complete one additional course, which is a requirement of North Clackamas School District, and that's a senior project requirement, and the high school still handles that piece. each of the middle college students receives support from their advisor counselor, who's assigned to help that student meet any obstacles or challenges that they may encounter that could be barriers to success in the program, and to monitor that student's progress and to offer encouragement. Students complete their high school diploma and may earn an associate's degree or a certificate or at least a good running start on a college career pathway. Depends on how many credits they have when they enter the community college, how far they get into that. That's my brief overview of structure, and I want to then, I've asked Lisa Nielsen, who is faculty in the program, to talk about the students themselves. And in your handout you see three profiles that we've prepared for you, and Lisa will give you a little more detail on those students.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I've also never done this, so bear with me. I wanted to give you just a little bit more of a snapshot of these students, and I think they represent well a cross-section of the students that we draw into our program. Zach Pugh is one of our students who came from the charter in the North Clackamas School District. Zach comes from a fairly unconventional family and never was fit for traditional education. He came to us with a history of absences and had expressed to me on numerous occasions that he felt like he had lots of assignments and lots to do, but he wasn't really learning anything. He found a home with us in the community college setting as he was offered the opportunity to learn in a more hands-on environment. He is looking into the building construction program that we offer and has seen that direction and used that for motivation and has been successful with us. Elise Vallet came to us from one of the alternative programs, the alternative high school programs that Clackamas Community College runs. She is a first-generation college student, never felt that traditional high school was a fit for her. She came to us as a way to avoid the drama and finish her high school in a more mature atmosphere. She has since decided on pursuing a transfer degree and is presently getting moved on to financial aid and plans to transfer to the University of Oregon to complete that. Matt Wibbins is an interesting success story, I think, for us. He came to us, again, from one of the Clackamas Community College alternative high school programs and was with us on campus taking college classes for a year. He probably has overcome the most barriers of any student that I've had thus far in our program. He moved to the Portland area after being extremely gang involved in the Seattle area. He had drug and alcohol issues and moved to the Portland area to get away from some of his less productive connections. He never went to a traditional high school, never felt comfortable with that, and frequently expressed how it just seemed irrelevant in his life. He came to our college program and, like I said, completed his high school credential while taking college classes. He was with us for a year, and his life situation changed again. He was dealing with homelessness and left the program. He recently took his resume that he worked on while he was with us and his list of references and got a job as a welder in training with Gunderson. He was chosen out of 150 applicants. So we consider him a huge success.
Absolutely. And for the record, would you give us your name?
I'm Lisa Nielsen.
Thank you. We just need to have that official.
Okay. No problem.
You did very well.
So. Thank you.
Representative Dolan has a question.
Lisa, in dealing with Matt, Clackamas Community College has an alternative school. So, that makes them eligible for state funding as a public school. So Clackamas was paid the $7,200. I think we're in a ballpark here. Don't hold me to that. Clackamas then received the $7,200 for Matt, while he was enrolled. Did they also receive the community college ADM or whatever it's identified as?
I'm going to refer that to Donna. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, Representative Dullum, since I manage the contracts and Lisa's in the classroom, I'll give you the details on that.
I'm in the wrong place. Thank you very much.
That's okay. So, what we do is we have a contract with North Clackamas School District, which includes a portion of the ADM, and that is flowed through to us.
Do you know what the portion is?
It's 95%. And my understanding with the formula, I'm puzzled by the 7,000 because my understanding is that our 95 comes off of about 5,000, or actually it's slightly less this year for North Clackamas. It's 4,500. And it varies from year to year, even I think term to term. The way it's calculated.
So you've completely dealt with Matt, and you're getting 95% of 4,500.
Right.
And then do you also, when Matt enrolls in community college strictly, then do you get to charge him to the state formula for ADM also?
For FTE?
Yes.
Yes, we do. And let me tell you why it costs more than just one of those sources. We are paying for tuition, books, fees, and additional support such as the advisor counselor has to come out of that, in addition to instructors, and other services that are needed to help a student like Matt. For example, we have drug and alcohol counseling that we contract for and that we often have to call upon for students like Matt. We test the students for learning disabilities, and a lot of times what we find is that there's a learning disability involved that has kept a student from being successful. We pay for services to have that kind of assessment done and then to provide accommodations. We also sometimes pay for tutors to help a student like Matt be successful. So we're really adding quite a bit. And keep in mind, too, that a student who does not yet have a diploma or even a GED is not eligible for any kind of financial aid, such as other college students might have access to. So it's quite a lot that we're trying to cover. We, frankly, could not run a program on strictly ADM.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair. I have a question. Because you're dealing with at-risk youth, mm-hmm. primarily, what is the success rate for these students?
I want to refer this, Madam Chair and Representative Farr, I would like to refer this to Dr. Brenda Marks, congratulations, who is a faculty also and department chair for our alternative programs. Brenda.
Madam Chair and representatives of the committee.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
I'm Dr. Brenda Marks from Clackamas Community College. We have several measures for success with our students because I'm going to speak a little more broadly, not just about this middle college program, but about what our department does with high school students. We measure our success based on sometimes just students attending and behaving appropriately in class, not always based on the credits that they earn, because students have not been successful in their traditional high school setting. We've created programs that really try to encourage students and demand that they become successful participants in their schooling. So we measure, I did not bring statistics today about success, but we measure and report back to the high schools because, in fact, students have been referred to us. They are not released to us. We report back to counselors about behavior issues, about attendance, about alcohol and drug and recovery, and about credits that students earn. So, and we serve a range of students from 15 to 21 years old. So, you know, each student is really an individual case that we manage as an individual person. And we call our faculty and advisors. They're dealing with probation officers, with alcohol and drug treatment, with all kinds of things to really recapture and socialize
students who have been rejected or stepped out of the system. So,
I could maybe help with that, Representative, Madam Chair, and was it Representative Shield? Excuse me. We can get you the exact numbers on numbers of GED students we graduate and numbers of adult high school diplomas we award. And we've just started. Middle college is pretty brand new, so we have one group, I think, for the first year. We graduated from last summer, which would be the North Clackamas High School Diploma. But just in rough numbers, and I'm fairly new to Clackamas myself, last year I attended graduation, and we have a whole separate graduation night for GED and Adult High School Diploma, which is about the same size as our associate degree graduation night, which follows, and it seemed like about 300 total, I'm thinking, and we were just figuring out we serve about 500 at any given time, but that's probably kind of a duplicated head count for how many are in program during the day.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it, do your students, since you're talking kids from 15 to whatever the upper age limit could be, and it could be whatever.
21.
Do they take SEM tests in math and English, and those are the state tests at all?
Madam Chair and Representative
Roblin,
thank you. We do offer SEM testing to students. The SEM is a kind of an interesting test in that it's age-based, and not all of our students have been to school. So we cooperate with high schools in offering the test. But it's not always a good measure.
Come on.
Yes.
This is Lisa Nielsen again. With the middle college, the students are required to take the SEM test, and they can also fulfill the requirements using work samples. But because they will be issued a North Clackamas School District diploma, they are, in fact, required to do the SEM test.
I had a quick question from the board. And sometimes just a statement will skim a thought, and I just thought I would capture it while we're here. You mentioned in response to Representative Dahlin's question, you were surprised about the 7,200 figure. You thought it was more like 4,200. Now, I think that might be the statutory figure, and it changes by virtue of time and appropriations and distributions and all of that. So, but you, are you, were you saying by that you only received the base of on the statutory figure, the 95% of that statutory 4,200, and not the actual distribution to the district?
I don't think they would know.
You don't know.
Well, I know that. Excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative Dahl. I know that when we negotiate our contracts, we take that on each one has a different ADM. We work with 10 different high schools in our service area, and each one has a somewhat different number, and they can vary by as much as $500 or $800 from one school to another. So my understanding, this year, a year ago it was $5,000 in North Clackamas. Now it's $4,500. And
so it does.
Yeah.
On a sliding scale.
Okay. Madam Chair, I also wonder if some of the money that was calculated into that might be for additional ADM that might be provided for English as a second language speakers or young parenting
the
team. Right. So that could be weighted in.
Transportation also.
Okay. Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you have a student coming to you and you need to evaluate, and then my point is everyone, just about everyone has some kind of a talent, but we need to find that. How do you find it? How do you assess and evaluate? Because some people that the brain-wise might not be smart on the math, but that the person is good on hands, which is a special talent also. And how do you find the talent? I think it's very important to find that quality. How do you do that?
You know, do you want me to okay. Madam Chairman and Representative Lim, I really think the structure of the program where the students work closely with an individual in a small school format allows for that. I don't know that we have anything in our formal evaluation process that is necessarily looking for strengths other than what the students give us in their narratives, with their histories and what their interests are, what do they like to do outside of school, and to work effectively with this population, I really believe, as an employee, you've got to be able to glean what the strengths are from the students in that manner. And it's one of the reasons why we work so closely with the students, and they have this resource person that follows them through the, you know, their college career and helps them sort of identify and channel those strengths.
As a follow-up question, I'm sorry I didn't ask this sooner, but Representative Roblin over here was chomping at the bit, so I wanted to give him a chance. We were talking about success rates, and so I guess what I really wanted to know, you've got this group of students, you want them to stay in school, and I think the purpose, of course, for their success would be either for them to go on in their education or to enter some type of employment and be productive members of society. So when I ask about success rate, and I'm sorry I didn't articulate that very well, that's really what I meant. So when you take that group of students that you're serving in your program, could you provide us with some, can you identify what the success rate is for those students? What percentage of those students have either gone on to higher ed? What percentage of those students are now in the workforce?
Madam Chair and Representative Farr, one of the challenges of working in a democracy that protects privacy rights is that one cannot always effectively track what students are doing. And our particular population is relatively mobile. So, you know, we know when they come back and tell us. But you can't collect that kind of data. And right now, the systems are not, the OUS, the system, and the community college systems aren't even working together effectively to give us always transition data from community college to higher ed or university systems.
How about, may I finish this question with a follow-up? How about data to show the graduation rate versus the dropout rate in the program? That would be helpful.
We can get that for you. That's not a problem.
Thank you. And if you would provide that through Jim.
Sure.
If I could very quickly, I know we're out of time, but I would like to invite both James Jansen from the Gateway Project and also David McDonald and Jennifer up. I'm trying to get all three of them up here. Thank you so much from the Middle College.
Thank you.
What I'm going to ask James to do, and the Gateway Project is a project that Portland Community College has, and he had brought actually a DVD of student testimonies of how this project helped them. I'm going to ask him to do like a 3-minute summary, and then if after 3 o'clock you'd like to stay and watch those testimonies, we'll run that for you. The other thing I'd like David McDonald and Jennifer to address is the dual enrollment that happens between community colleges and the Oregon University system. I had Bruce talk about how Lynn Benton in the middle has seen the benefit. One of the sheets of paper that you had with information was a dual enrollment between community colleges and the university system and how that number is growing. So first, about 3 minutes from James. I'm going to give David about 1 minute, the other student about 2 minutes. We'll get out of here, still at three, and then we can answer questions as you so desire.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to be a real driver on that, but we will accommodate you, so don't feel shortened here. A couple of us will hang and watch the CD.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much, your patience and understanding. My name is Dr. James Jansen. I am the manager for curriculum and instruction for what is called Portland Community College Alternative Programs. But a large part of that is called Gateway to College, and that's why I'm here to speak to that particular program. but would like to also mention the other programs that are part of our system. I have given you a packet, and you'll see that it's a folder, actually. Yes, thank you very much. If you could please go into that, and I'm going to try to keep it to 3 minutes, but I'm just going to refer you to that. And there's some statistics in there that are very useful. I heard the previous testimony, and it relates directly to what those individuals mentioned. There's also a copy of the Oregonian article that appeared 2 Sundays ago. It was about our program. It's very thorough. It gives a very descriptive representation of our program, what we do, how successful it is. So I'd like to refer you to that as well. And there's also brochures of all of our 3 programs, which include, in addition to Gateway to College, what is called MAP, which means Multicultural Academic Program, which is for ESL students, going from beginning level through advanced.
ESL,
okay, I assume that...
It's worth a dollar.
English as a second language. Okay, sorry.
I let a couple others slide.
Okay. How about NATO? Would that one count? Or SCUBA. And the other program is called YES, which means Youth Empowered to Succeed, which is a GED program. So we like to think of ourselves as having something for just about everybody who comes into our program. But Gateway to College is primarily, if I may go back to that program, is primarily for students who have dropped out of high school and or who are at risk of dropping out of high school. And so it is designed for them, and there's certain specifications they have to meet. They have to have fewer than 17 credits earned. They have to be between the ages of 16 and 20. They have to live within, for us at least, 4 different school districts, including Portland Public, Beaverton, Tualatin and Tigard, and Lake Oswego. Those are our districts. But that's what we are. I like to think of it as a program that helps to jumpstart a lot of students' academic careers because they've dropped out. They may have been out a certain time. Our program sort of guarantees that they're at least up to the 8th grade and are ready to now transition on to other courses that will prepare them for college-level classes. We are funded by the school districts, and we have to have, I was going to add this to the testimony previously, but we have to have 17 students to break even in what we call a cohort. And a cohort consists of a reading, a writing, a math, and what we call a career guidance course. And they have to take all those courses all at the same time. They go to class no more than 3 hours a day, 4 days a week, with Friday being reserved for what we call an academic lab, which is a 2-hour in-depth treatment of certain concepts that were covered the previous 2 weeks. And that's what we call a cohort. After they finish the cohort experience, they transition. Well, they go many different ways, depending on where they are. Many of them test out of reading completely. They only ever take another reading course. Some of them test right into college-level writing courses or math courses. But we also have courses that will get them ready for those college-level classes after the cohort experience. I just want to add at the end here, the Gateway to College program is being replicated at other sites in the country, including Clackamas Community College. But we also have sites up and running right now in Maryland and Southern California. We have other partners that are coming on next fall, including Clackamas. They are also in Texas and in Georgia. And within the next 3 years, we will have 17 sites across the country up and running doing a Gateway to College program. And the reason for that is our funding is being funded, this part of the program, the replication part, is being funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and you can read about that in your packet. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, Dave McDonald from Oregon University System. The advantage of finishing a lengthy and very productive discussion is to be able to give you a quick recap. Our community college colleagues have done a wonderful job of creating a number of pathways for students from high schools into their programs. The 4-year universities have a equal I can say, commitment to providing access to students from community colleges into our baccalaureate programs. Presently, 6 of the 7 campuses have established and operational dual enrollment programs, and the 7th, Western Oregon, has recently signed an agreement and is currently working on the final details. These agreements do take some time to work out because we have federal financial aid guidelines, we have registration issues, advising issues, which are all key components of a successful program, and it's really prudent on our part to go at it in a timely manner to make sure when students come in, we've taken care of all the wrinkles and all the curves so the students can get a very straight pathway, as Jennifer will describe in a moment. It's important for the committee to note that this is a very efficient process that is student-centered. These programs are about what the student needs and how we can best facilitate the student's educational goals and objectives in the most timely and efficient manner. They typically involve one application for admissions, so we're trying to reduce the amount of paperwork students do. They involve a single institution administering financial aid, which is increasingly difficult given that students now take courses and credits from a number of institutions at the same time. If you thought that it was rather interesting and confusing to try to track all the options from high school to community college, if you look at what a typical undergraduate student is taking and where they're picking up courses, it's even more confusing and amazing that students are as successful as they are in this area. The programs have grown tremendously, as the graph on the bottom of the handout we have given you provides detail on. I see no reason why these programs will not continue to grow. There are currently 23 programs that are operational, 10 more that I would say within the next 12 months will be operational, another 10 that are in discussion, in which there is an early commitment to do it, but they haven't progressed to the point where they've addressed all the details they need to work on. This is such an important program that the OUS Board Working Group, which is Excellence in Delivering Productivity, and is chaired by Gretchen Schutte, who is president of Schmeketa Community College, has identified dual enrollment programs as a priority area of activity for the community colleges in concert with the Oregon universities and campuses to really work on, again, for students. So with that big backdrop, I'm really going to turn this over to the person you want to hear more, which is a student who's actually been in the middle of this. Jennifer is a fifth-year senior, double majoring in biology and general education, who wants to become a veterinarian. And she has some great insights into how the program has really affected her experience.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Chisholm. I am a fifth-year senior with a double major and a double minor. I'm graduating this spring. I've been in the dual enrollment program now for 3 years, and I can't tell you what a tremendous success it's been for me. I was having trouble with the higher level classes at Oregon State University. Found out I could take a smaller sized class that was the same equivalent over at Lynn Benton Community College, and my GPA shot up immediately because I got a lot more personal contact with the instructors because the class size went from 300 to 40 students. I've had tremendous success between Lynn Benton Community College, Oregon State University, and the Lynn Benton Center over in Corvallis called the Benton Center. They all offer classes that are really flexible for me. I've been able to take classes at Oregon State during the morning and then at Lynn Benton in the afternoons and then back over to the Benton Center at night. It's been just an absolutely great experience for me. It also is nice to have the benefits of both colleges. I get to use the library at both of them, and I have benefits that are extendable to either one, including full-time status between the two colleges. So I could take 6 credits at one and 6 credits at the other, and it's just been an overall success for me, and I highly recommend it to my friends who also need something that's a little more personal because the smaller class sizes do seem to help. I don't know anything else that I could tell you right off the bat, so if you have any questions.
Ms. Chisholm, I do have a quick question, mm-hmm. and it sounds like a wonderful opportunity that you have been able to take advantage of. My goodness, it's impressive. Now, you were at Oregon State, is that correct?
Yes, I started off there.
And how did you learn of the program at Lynn Benton?
It was actually through one of my friends who was doing the dual enrollment program. I was still living in the dorms at that time, and they were talking to me about it, and since it's such close proximity, I was really interested in it, and that's why I went to the admissions office and gathered more information.
We just have a college student, and I was wondering, did you have any opportunities when you were in high school to take any?
Yes, I did. I went to Gresham High School, and so I've gotten to take the advanced placement courses, and then I also did the dual enrollment with Mountain Hood Community College in my high school.
Thank you. Madam Chair and the committee, thank you for asking us to come back. Thank you for letting us bring the whole scope of accelerated learning because it goes across the board. And I know some of you have committees to get to. I do know we will have the DVD running so you can hear the other testimonials. And if you'd ever have any other questions for us, please feel free to get hold of myself, Commissioner Campos Browley. We'll come back with anything that you need to know about these programs. We're very excited about what we can do together to help students learn.
Thank you very much. Well, is it okay to adjourn and then listen to the DVD? Thank you. With no other official business to come to this committee, other than after we adjourn, we'll hear the DVD. This committee will stand adjourned. Thank you.
Do you have your audio turned on at all? I'm going to get...